But the interesting part is, all right, well, one, he's not on the Canadiens roster on ESPN, so they're fucking up.
Yeah.
I guess when the season's over, the season's over.
Or when you just fire all of your NHL staff.
Yeah. So when I went to the pull-down tab to go to the Lightning roster, and I'm scrolling down to the bottom.
He's not there either?
No, I haven't gotten that far. There are two slots on the pull-down tab that just say TBD.
Oh, my God. Oh no.
It's all the other teams and then two TBDs.
That's worse than Vegas' roster of guy.
They are truly awful.
But it's two. It's not one. It's two.
Yeah.
Sergachev.
Does ESPN know something we don't know?
No.
Like, are they going to break a story?
Dude.
Well, they can't. They quite literally don't have NHL reporters.
I mean, are they going to, loan out Adam Schefter?
In front of his bookcase.
I love TweetDeck. It's so much better than the Twitter website.
You love TweetDeck?
Yeah. There's Drouin, still on the Tampa Bay Lightning roster.
Okay. How do I craft this show from scratch?
No, we start with game six.
No.
We start with how happy you are about the Warriors.
We start with my first time ever drinking lemonade on the show.
it's a virgin lemonade.
This character arc, this story arc for you, where you're done with Miller Lite, you've moved on to virgin lemonade.
Is that out of a carton or is it homemade?
It looks good.
I'm serious. I want to know.
It's that one over there. It's the Kirkland.
Oh, that's fine.
But it's organic.
You got it from Costco. Whatever.
It's actually very... It's a good mix of sweetness, tartness, and sourness.
That's good. The lemon flavor's there? It's not too watered down?
Yeah, it does taste like lemon.
All right, that's good.
Do you like lemon heads?
I used to eat them when I was in second grade, and then I stopped.
I used to like them. Yeah, I think that's how it goes for everyone.
You
mentioned lemon heads to anyone, and it's like, oh yeah, those were great when I was six.
Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast, post-Stanley Cup Final Edition. I'm Felix Sicard, joined as always by Nick and Joe Berger. The Pittsburgh Penguins are Stanley Cup champions. First repeat champions since the Detroit Red Wings in 1997 and 1998. Pretty amazing accomplishment given how difficult it is to field not just a competitive team, but an elite team year in and year out. The Penguins have done it. It didn't really feel like they necessarily marched to the Stanley Cup like maybe the Red Wings of old did, but I was certainly impressed by it.
I was too, especially with all the injuries that they had to key players like Chris Letang, and they were still able to do it, and they had to play seven games against Washington, I believe.
Yeah, and Ottawa.
And Ottawa. So, it was not easy, and they got... I think it's fair to say they were outplayed in the first couple of games by Nashville.
Yeah,
in the last game.
Games three and four, especially.
Yeah.
Those were the ones.
Yeah, but I was thoroughly impressed by the team in general, and Crosby and Malkin, and I thought Matt Murray played really well, and Marc-Andre Fleury played very well in the first half of the playoffs. So, look, I thought in December that the Penguins, I thought that they were going to, you're getting a call.
Oh, my dad.
I thought that the Penguins in December looked like a team that could win the Cup, and the only reason that I hedged on that at all is because teams do not repeat,
right?
And then they repeated, so...
It felt like I didn't pick them to win the Cup. I didn't even pick them to make the conference final because I had the Capitals winning it. But as things went along, you kind of got this sense of like inevitability, just given like the sheer talent on that team.
Yeah,
I think with the Penguins, what was crazy is just that they were playing this style that it always felt like, okay, when is this going to fall apart? When is it going to fall apart? They're getting outshot. They're getting outplayed. But it never happened.
Yeah.
And people are saying, you know, there's the like Corsi truthers coming out where it's like, oh, well, look at the Penguins. They didn't need to outshoot teams. I'm like, well, yeah, because they had Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and Mike Sullivan behind the bench, and either Marc-Andre Fleury or Matt Murray stopping everything. So
yeah, and that's really what it always came back to, as far as why I thought they were going to win, even when they were getting outplayed or when they had a whole bunch of injuries. It's just that Fleury and Malkin and Kessel are really, really good.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's maybe all it takes.
Well, it's not that simple. Because
no, it's not, but...
Yeah, because the way they played, like, it was all... They definitely played to their strengths, you know, like they were just all out attack, quick breakouts, speed through the neutral zone. And, you know, it's, we like to talk about the stars of that team, but guys like Jake Guentzel, who I think got some votes for the Conn Smythe.
He got one.
Yeah.
Oh, like, that's ridiculous. That's still more.
That's still, I mean, that's a lot considering the guys that are on his team.
Yeah.
And I thought Connor Sheary was impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And then even on the back end, I mean, at times their blue line looked horrendous, but they still managed to get it done somehow.
Yeah.
Justin Schultz had a few big goals.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's interesting about the Stanley Cup Final, and I've already said this a bunch of times now, but I don't like it's hard for me to feel like the best team in the NHL this season came away at the Stanley Cup. And I know that sounds a little like dismissive of what the Penguins accomplished, but it kind of feels like they got hot at the right time.
I think they were the best team in the NHL, and I think that's why it's even crazier that they won it at a time in the year when they weren't the best team.
I mean, if you look at how the series against Nashville started, Nashville looked like they had never been this far in the playoffs before. Like, the game one, for as much as they dominated, they melted down. And, you know, the second game wasn't much better. So, I agree with what you're saying, that, you know, the Penguins got hot at the right time, and, you know, maybe the best team didn't win.
Washington.
Yeah, oh, yeah, okay. They're never going to win. But
they might win it next year.
Okay. With Nashville, like, you always hear, you know, this is why you play the games. You know, like, you don't, why it's not just on paper. You know, it's the teams are, you know, there's more than just, you know, the roster. It's more than just, you know, the skill of every player. You know, it's how the teams work together and how ultimately they perform. I know that sounds, you know, stupidly simplistic, but you know, with Nashville, it showed. You know, it very much seemed like that. Yeah, they were not used to what the Stanley Cup final required. You know, what you needed to win the cup. And well, Pittsburgh obviously
you
is.
Need a first line center, which they didn't have.
Yeah, that is true. That is fair.
Yeah,
and as much as we talk about the injuries for Pittsburgh, one for Nashville, Johansson was hurt. Mm-hmm. We found out that James Neal got hurt in Game One against Anaheim.
Kevin Fiala
got hurt very early.
Yeah, so I mean, they were definitely the. By game six, the forward group that they were trotting out just was, I think Colton Sissons was like their first line center,
yeah.
Or it was like Mike Fisher. It was not that scary. I mean, but their blue line is so good.
Mm.
Well, it's very good.
Yeah.
And I think that they used it pretty appropriately.
Yeah.
I mean, the it's sort of a parallel.
But from Ryan Ellis was like on one leg also.
Yeah, it was.
The year before, you know, when you know the Sharks lost. Yeah, you sort of see a bit of a parallel how the Sharks, you know, the first three rounds relied on their power play, and that's pretty much what got them past Nashville, but what got them into the final, and then it went, you know, stone cold, and then they lost, you know, they definitely got dominated, the Nashville this year, the first three rounds, their defense were scoring a lot of goals for them.
Yes.
And then, you know, they took a step back, you know, not because, you know, they got cold or, you know, whatever, but, you know, it's the cup final. It's the best competition there is.
Well, that's an interesting point, because in last year's final, I never felt like the Sharks were going to win that series.
Yeah, it never felt like it.
But there were moments in the series, especially when it was 2-2, and even when the Predators were down 2-0, where you got the impression that they could have won the whole thing.
Mm.
And you could argue... You could make a very good argument that if they had just had a better goaltender, they might have I think they would have probably won the series because Pekka was like awful.
Yeah, I mean,
Stanley Cup, like he was. I think he had maybe. I think the games that he did play well were the games where they scored like 5 and 4 goals in games 3 and 4.
Yeah,
where they didn't necessarily need him to be good. It's like he's not good when they need him to be.
Yeah, he definitely. He didn't even put himself in the position to steal a game.
Yeah, and then you know that they were so far into it that you can't just, we talked about it on the last podcast, but you can't just go to Saros, who's so unproven. But then, if anything, he's unproven, but Pekka Rinne is also proven to not be good. So anyway, it was an impossible kind of situation for Peter Laviolette.
I would just like to say very quickly that. I realized after the podcast when we were talking about does Nashville make a goalie change, and I was sort of laying into Saros a little bit, you know, unjustly. And then when they finally, like when Rinne had that crap game, well, Nashville's defense had that crap game, they finally pulled Rinne and put Saros in, and then I felt a little off the hook when he also allowed 3 goals.
Yeah, he did, but none of them were really his fault.
No, they weren't.
They were like passes to the slot.
I would argue that in that game, you know, even the ones on Rinne weren't necessarily Rinne's fault. Like Nashville just didn't show up to play that game.
Yeah.
And which is another mark of the inexperience. You know, it's a Stanley Cup final game. They didn't show up to play. They weren't ready to play.
Mike Fisher's been to the Stanley Cup final.
Okay.
So that must help them somehow.
20 Mike Fishers and they get the job done.
Well, now according to Vegas, the Penguins are the favorites to win the Cup next year. So,
and they have to be.
I guess the final question. We'll wrap this up. Do they three-peat? I feel like the smart answer is no.
Yeah, the smart answer is no.
I don't think so. I think someone's. I think they kind of. I don't want to say they had it easy, but they. Who did they have outside of Washington, who had to play a tough series against Toronto? They had to be kind of a not banged up, but like certainly a Washington team that just was coming off a tough series. They had to play Columbus in the first round.
Mm. I mean, Ottawa gave them a real tough series.
Ottawa gave them a tough series. Well, that's the thing.
It might have been the best series in the entire
Ottawa
final,
and playoffs. Washington gave them a tough series. And if it's not for Marc-Andre Fleury's like stick shaft,
yeah,
blocking Alex Ovechkin's one-timer in the slot.
Which he totally did on purpose, right, guys?
oh my God, did you see that?
They could have been out. Like there were so many instances where they could have been out.
Yeah.
It, like leading up to the final. Their best series was probably either the final or the first round.
Mm. Yeah.
So I'm not prepared to say that this is like a machine that's just going to steamroll through everyone again. I think that they deserve their win, but I'm pessimistic on their chances because Toronto's going to be better. Boston's going to be healthier.
Mm.
Well, we assume.
Yeah.
As of right now, Montreal is going to be better.
Columbus is going to maybe have Ilya Kovalchuk.
Yeah.
So the East is going to be better, and I mean they'll be good too, and they have moves that they can make. I don't know what they're going to get from Marc-Andre Fleury, but
I mean, if he gets taken to the expansion, nothing.
Yeah.
And then well, I think they're going to trade him before that.
Yeah.
And then that team. That's the thing. I don't think Marc-Andre Fleury is going to Vegas. Either he gets traded. Anyway, I don't think he's going there. I don't think he's getting picked up in expansion.
If there's still trade rumors, right now, Vegas knows who they're taking. Like, you know, the NHL, they had a conference call with all the GMs recently. Don't leak any rumors. Like, yeah. Don't leak anything. We want this under wraps.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, before that came out, there were already three other leaks where it was okay. Vegas has a deal with this team for to not take this player, whatever. And if we're hearing rumors about Fleury being traded, it means that Vegas probably isn't going
to
take him.
Yeah. I mean, it would be a shame for Pittsburgh to lose Fleury for nothing. But
no, yeah, like no team is getting screwed in this expansion draft. There's so much like backroom dealing that I think Vegas is going to be pretty bad next year. I think their path to like respectability next season, their blue line is going to be pretty good. Although that's not even a sure thing anymore.
The confidence I had in them the other day, talking to one of my teammates, I said, I mean, they're probably going to be better than Arizona.
No. Well, maybe.
Arizona's pretty bad.
But Arizona's going to, I think they're going to be better next season because
they ought to be.
They have so much young talent. And, I mean, they're picking pretty high again.
Mm-hmm.
But with Vegas, I don't foresee their blue line being as good as we thought it was going to be. And then up front, their path is going to be free agency. And, you know, there's been rumors about them going after Kovalchuk. They signed his KHL linemate, Vadim Shipachev.
Yeah.
And maybe they're going to go after Evgeny Dadonov also and reunite that KHL line and just throw them into the NHL.
It'd be fun.
I think that'd be fascinating. But, you know, they're going to have some big names. I think, you know, you might see like... I think you're going to see some interesting trades. But as far as the expansion draft goes, I think teams are just so prepared and so like ready to position themselves to not lose anything that I can't foresee Vegas being that interesting of a roster.
Yeah.
Just from what they get from the expansion draft.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you're wrong about that. And getting back to Fleury real quick. Well, that would be great for Calgary.
Yeah, it'd really be fantastic for Calgary.
I think you're right. I think everyone is making things foolproof for their team so that they don't get screwed over. But if hypothetically Vegas did take Fleury, they're really not getting screwed over because they have Matt Murray.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, and that's the thing. But if you're Pittsburgh, you're going to be fine. But you're also losing a pretty...
Good commodity for nothing.
A pretty valuable trade chip.
Yeah.
I would be looking at Calgary. I'd have to dig deeper to see what Calgary could send them their way. But they have to do something with Fleury. I mean, it'd be silly to lose for nothing. He's clearly still pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think I heard someone talking about this the other day, but his injury history is actually pretty nice. Like he's not banged up, and that's usually a pretty good predictor for how a goalie's going to perform into his 30s.
Yeah,
that's why I'm actually really worried about Carey Price going into his next contract, his current contract runs out next summer, and he's had like how many knee injuries?
Yeah,
and I think he's had a hip injury.
Yeah.
And so that. And doesn't bode well.
It's in that really tough spot, too, where he's going to be, what, 30 or 31 and still going to have plenty of good years. But it's like, do you want to give a guy on the other side of 30 a whole lot of money, you know?
Exactly.
And term.
Exactly. So let's talk about, speaking of the Canadians, let's talk about the trade that happened today.
Yes.
It's been rumored for a long time. I mean, almost for like 2 years now that the Lightning are interested in have been interested in moving Jonathan Drouin. It finally happened, and in the last few days, rumors were swirling that the Canadians were interested in him. Today, the news broke. Jonathan Drouin to Montreal for Mikhail Sergachev. A conditional second-round pick going to Tampa Bay if Sergachev plays 40 games next season.
Yes, combined regular season and playoffs.
Which we'll have to see if that happens.
Yeah.
I mean, he was one of the best players in junior hockey this season. So I don't think there's any point in bringing him to the AHL next season. I think you look at the blue line depth of Tampa Bay, and I think this is a move for both for now and for the future.
Yeah. Well, the only reason or incentive for them to not play him 40 games is because I think they get an extra year of his RFA.
Yeah. Which matters.
Yes, it does.
But I think when I look at Tampa Bay, this is a team that's very well positioned to win a Stanley Cup next year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, they can win right now. And, you know, the whole talk about them is, aside from Stamkos getting healthy, the big need that they have is upgrading their defense.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely did that.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a shame that they had to offload Drouin. But when you look at the other two guys that they could have moved or that you would think would be attractive pieces, it's Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat, who are both RFAs as well. Mm. Except Tyler Johnson is 26, and I think he's been injured.
He has been several times.
And Andre Palat is also 26.
Mm.
And I think he's a good player. I'm a little kind of meh on him.
Yeah.
So Drouin was your best asset.
Yeah.
And Sergachev is considered, widely considered, one of the like just best prospects in general.
Right.
He's like almost 6'3". He's like 220.
Mm.
He's a big left-handed defenseman who's got a pretty big offensive upside to his game. He seems very positionally sound in his zone. I saw a few games of his last season. The Canadiens gave him the 7 games before sending him back to Windsor. And you could tell that the physical tools were there. Like, he skates very well. He moves the puck. But you could tell that the maturity wasn't... He didn't stick out to me like P.K. Subban did when I first saw him play.
Mm.
That being said, P.K. Subban was a second-round pick and had 1 year in the AHL, you know,
right,
to kind of be prepared for the NHL. Sergachev hasn't had that. He was only 18 at the time that I saw him, and he was a 9th overall pick. So I think he's going to be a good player. And when you look at Tampa Bay's blue line of Victor Hedman, Jason Garrison, Anton Strahlman, Brandon Coburn, I mean, Hedman is their youngest guy at 26, and then Andre Schuster is the next youngest at 26 also, but he's an RFA and he's not very good.
Right.
So they needed Sergachev. Like, this is actually, I actually think this is a really good, like, hockey trade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think both teams, I shouldn't say both. The Tampa Bay Lightning definitely addressed a need, a glaring need. The Canadiens addressed a need for sure, but kind of took away, they kind of created another need now.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting
thing. And that's where this leads, yeah.
That's the interesting thing is that everyone's talking about how it's a copycat league, and everyone's looking at the Penguins model, really strong up front. Yeah. They have a lot of speed and skill up front.
And then Brian Dumoulin.
Yeah, so you just have to get the puck up to those guys. It kind of looks like Montreal is doing that right now.
You think so?
Well, yeah, because they just traded their best defensive prospect. So right now they have an aging Andre Markov, who is still good.
Who's a UFA.
Yeah, who's a UFA.
And 38 years old.
Yeah.
I don't even think we should call him aging. Like,
he's aged.
He's aged.
He's aged. He's fully aged.
He's aged.
Yeah, yeah. He's on a new level.
Yeah, he's in his final hockey form.
But then after that, they have... Would their next best defenseman be Petrie? Or
well, their Bollier? Best... their best... Presumably their best defenseman is Shea Weber, who's 31 years old, who...
Right.
I actually am coming around to a little bit in the last few weeks, but is still 31 and making a boatload of money.
Yeah. I mean,
for the next like decade.
If Montreal is, you know, trying to, you know, copy Pittsburgh and, you know, get that puck up to the speedy forwards, that actually sort of plays into Shea Weber's, you know, glass chipping game.
Well, yeah, because if you watch Shea Weber play, he what he does is like I was watching a game of his the other day, and I swear what he does almost every time is he skates it up, kind of looks around, and then just dishes it off to his partner.
Mm.
Like, he's never the guy actually making the pass. But at least as far as his reputation goes, he's a good in-zone defender.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very good in the offensive zone.
Yes. Yeah, that's undeniable.
On the power play, he is lethal. His shot is still, like, he injured, like, 3 different guys in the Habs last season.
Yeah.
Jeff Petrie had a bit of a rough year last year. From like a number of standpoints, which is concerning, considering that he's 29, has 4 more years on his deal, and has a no move clause. But I think that he will rebound.
Yeah,
he's shown enough to me to where I'm confident that he'll be fine.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he didn't bounce back. Maybe not completely, but like mostly.
And he also was anchored next to Alexei Yemelin for a lot of the season, which you could understand why that might not work out. Emelin, by the way, is 31, which I kind of...
Wow, that like, happened fast.
I thought he was like 27 or something.
Jeez.
But then the Canadians, you go down the list, they have Brandon Davidson, who is 25, has 1 more year before an RFA, which I like Brandon Davidson. Yeah. I think that so long as he gets used, I think he can be a good like third pairing puck mover.
Mm.
And then Jordy Benn, who is on a very nice deal at $1.1 million cap hit for the next 2 seasons. He is 29, but I really like his two-way game. And then you got Nathan Beaulieu, who is supposedly the kind of future.
Yeah.
Hasn't really shown the kind of potential you'd want to see from the guy that was a first-round pick and that has kind of been touted for a long time. I don't really know how to feel about him at this point in time. I still think he's a good player, and I think he has a good future. I just don't know what he's going to want. He is an RFA with arbitration rights. Then you have Andre Markov. What do you pay him? And then you go further down the list, Nikita Nesterov. I don't know what he's going to command.
Yeah.
Another RFA. Don't think he's going to get that much. So the Canadians have this interesting batch of defensemen.
Yeah.
And you blend it all together, and I think you get... You blend it all together, and you kind of dump it out, and you... I think you get a pretty good NHL blue line.
Yeah.
All things considered.
Yeah. Yes, when you sift it out, like, there are good pieces there. It's actually not as bleak as I originally thought. But...
So I think in their heads, they thought, well, Sergachev is our best chip, and... I mean, this is the part that I have to mention, is that their offense is very lackluster.
Mm-hmm.
You saw it in the playoffs. They just don't have enough guys who can create. They have, you know, like Max Pacioretty, for as great as he is, he's a guy who plays up and down.
Yeah.
Just drive it down the wing.
His game is very straightforward.
Take a shot. So they need a guy like Drouin, who's very, very, I mean, very shifty.
Yeah.
Extremely quick. There's been some criticisms of his production. He's 22 years old.
Last year was his first full year.
He's kind of had a weird trajectory. And he's also kind of been straddling like the third line.
Yeah.
Second full year.
Yeah. I mean,
so
all things considered, I wouldn't criticize a 22-year-old that just scored 21 goals and 32 assists.
I mean, 53 like, points. I didn't realize that he had that many assists.
Yeah. And that's where I think, okay. So anything else on Drouin? I'll just say that, like, yeah, I think he's a great ad for their group up front.
Mm.
But where this leads now is Alex Galchenyuk.
Yes.
Who has had a very interesting path in Montreal,
yes,
since he arrived. Now the big question is, and what seems, I think what's going to happen is that they're going to trade Galchenyuk.
Oh yeah.
For a defenseman. Which is like this like shitty feedback loop.
I'm not even a Habs fan, and I'm trying to enjoy this time right now where Drouin and Galchenyuk are on the team on the same team at the same time.
Right,
because it's such a great thing. Like
it is, yeah. And so what's interesting there is that, and why I think that if they go the route of keeping Galchenyuk, so you guys are in agreement that they should keep him, or
oh yeah,
depending on the deal, because right now the rumor, the kind of prevailing rumor is that Jonas Brodin is on the market.
Well, with Galchenyuk, I saw a tweet from either like Bob McKenzie or Darren Drager or something yesterday or today, and you know, they were saying, you know, the thing with, you know, Galchenyuk is, you know, they've tried him at center and they don't seem very high on him. Not high on him, but like they don't think he has what it
takes. They don't believe in him at all.
Yeah,
as a centerman,
like, whoever tweeted straight up said they. Montreal doesn't think he has what it takes to be an NHL center.
Even though his best production has been at center.
Yeah,
right?
Like his best year was when he played a significant amount of games at center. Like it hasn't even been close. Like that's when he's performed the best, when he's actually like not just been like, oh, he could be this. No, he's been like very good.
And Drouin is supposedly a center as well. So
yeah, supposedly.
And Montreal's big complaint, self-victimization going to the offseason is, oh, we don't have a number one center, which I think is like ludicrous. They do have a number one center, and now if they were to put Drouin at center, which I think they will do, it sounds like they will, but if you had Galchenyuk and Drouin as your top two centers, I mean,
oh my God.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're trading Galchenyuk for a defenseman, they might not have a choice but to put Drouin at center.
I just don't think they should trade him for a defenseman.
I don't
either. If anything.
It would have to be a dynamite, like elite top level defenseman. Otherwise, there's no way I would do it.
This is just such a weird situation because I think that Galchenyuk and Drouin complement each other very nicely.
Yeah.
Where Galchenyuk is not the fastest guy, he does have enough speed, obviously, but he's much more of a slow it down, just kind of stick handle all over the place, and you know that he's got that quick shot. I mean, he's a better. I think he's going to be a better goal scorer than Drouin is, or is going to be. He's got a very nice one timer. Meanwhile, Drouin is a speedy playmaker.
Yeah.
So great. I think you put those two on the same line, and there'd be fireworks.
Yeah.
And, you know what should happen, but it's not going to happen. Is Shea Weber's there? Shattenkirk's looking to be the number one guy somewhere, and you know he could. You know he would definitely help Montreal.
Yeah, and he's a right-handed defenseman.
Yeah, and you know they. If they went out and, you know, signed Shattenkirk, which they have the cap space for, currently, what, 17 mil?
They have 17, but it's
I mean, obviously it's not that simple. They're,
yeah,
it's still going to have to be allocated to other players as well. But you know, they could probably make it work, depending on exactly what Shattenkirk is asking for.
Yeah.
But you know, if Weber wasn't there, it'd be almost like a no-brainer. Keep Galchenyuk and then sign Shattenkirk.
Well, that's an interesting point. If you're a stickler for the lefty righty defense pair tandem idea, then Shattenkirk might not be the fit, because both Weber and Petrie are righties.
Yeah,
and so you kind of run into what Washington ran into, which is, well, now we kind of like put him on the third pairing, or I guess he'd be second pairing, because I don't think they're moving Weber off the first. I think Shattenkirk will make a lot of sense for Montreal, but if you look at their cap space, so they have $17 million right now. The guys that they have to resign, well, we don't know what's going to happen with Alex Galchenyuk, but we can assume that Drouin. So another thing we haven't mentioned, as soon as Drouin was acquired, they signed him to a 6-year deal, $5.5 million per, which I think is right on the money.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I think he's worth. And I think that contract is going to be looking really good as soon as probably next season.
Yeah.
That's good term limit for him too.
Yeah. Because he's going to be 28 at the end of that. And actually, yeah, he's going to be 28. And by then, I think it's a good time to see, you know, I think they're going to get his best years. So then you have Galchenyuk, who has been in the NHL longer than Drouin, has had better seasons. He has a 30-goal season to his name.
Mm.
He has the draft pedigree. I would assume that he would get the same contract, pretty much.
Yeah.
So that already bites into your 17. You're basically down to 11.5. You still have to re-sign Radulov, who...
They need to re-sign Radulov.
Who they, like, he's a must-sign.
Yeah.
I think he's going to get probably 6.5. He was making 5.75 last season.
Mm.
And it sounds like he's going to get around 6.5. So then your 11 is down to 5, around 5. And then you still have to re-sign Andre Markov.
Mm.
And you still have to re-sign Nathan Beaulieu.
Yeah.
So that 17 evaporates pretty quickly, which is why I don't think they're going to bring back Galchenyuk for exactly this reason.
Yeah.
Because it's, in a way, coming down to Galchenyuk or Radulov, and... which is a stupid, stupid position to
play. And we already know how they feel about Galchenyuk.
They don't trust Galchenyuk, which they should, because there's evidence to suggest he might actually be better than Drouin. I think stylistically, I kind of like Drouin's game a little bit better, but I think production-wise, bottom line, they're kind of the same player.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting. One of the thoughts that I had was, Drouin was ecstatic about this because he's playing for his
childhood team.
Yeah, like he.
Oh, and it's a marketing slam dunk for the Canadians.
Yeah,
French Canadian kid.
The problem is, if he doesn't deliver, and kind of quickly, we know how vicious the market.
They'll turn on him.
Yeah, and
then he'll be the next scapegoat.
Yeah, and he could be. I could see him being kind of a fragile player in terms of.
Well, are you basing this off of what happened in Tampa Bay?
A little bit.
With the agent and the... Yeah. But, I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, but also, if he wants to perform, like, he's excited and, his town turns on him, he's going to... if his town turns on him, he's going to... it could be kind of a blow to his ego. And, he might not perform as well as they expect, which, again, kind of a feedback loop. Feeds into itself, and he might do even worse. So I'm going to be very interested to see how well he does, especially if he doesn't get off to a hot start, because it might be nothing. I'd be very surprised if he turns into a Subban or a Galchenyuk.
You mean like a lightning rod type player?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because he doesn't have the personality. And I mean, look, what are the two things that both Subban and Galchenyuk have going against them? Galchenyuk's a Russian, which, it just, you're always going to get labeled with the kind of personality issues.
Yeah.
And then you have Subban, who's this outspoken, flashy guy, who's exactly not what Mark Bergevin wants. Drouin doesn't have any of that. He's quiet. I don't think he's very humble at all, but he's French Canadian. Like he's going to get away with the same stuff that these guys were doing, but he's going to get by because of the name on the sweater, basically.
If anything, I could see him being a little bit more like Carey Price, where if he's not doing well, you know, the media goes after him, and you know, there might be, you know, you see him react a certain way, you know, in his game, but you know, once he figures it out, like, he's going to be extremely good and everyone's going to love him.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be good right away. Yeah.
I do too.
I don't think there's any, there's maybe a slight flop potential, because I don't think he's going to be like a top three scorer. I don't think he's in that realm, but I could see him being a solid, like, at least 60 points a season type of guy.
Oh yeah,
and easy. 60 points in today's NHL is kind of a lot.
Yeah. So yeah, it really is.
Yeah. So I think it's a good, it's a good-ish trade for Montreal, depending on what they do next.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. Like,
so that's why I was excited to see them get him as a fan. I just, we, the Canadians.
no disrespect to Jonas Brodin, but. Brodin for Galchenyuk was so underwhelming.
So I was excited to see him because the Canadians haven't really traded for a guy like that in forever, maybe ever, unless you count maybe trading for the draft pick that became Guy Lafleur. But
from the Seals,
yes. But oh no, the Kings. But you look at Drouin's game, and there's so much upside. There's so much potential for stardom in Montreal. But if they trade Galchenyuk, like we've been saying, for Jonas Brodin,
yeah,
I mean, to me, that really defeats what they've... Because what they've done now, and if they stick to this, they've built one of the... Maybe the best offenses in the league.
Yeah.
As long as they bring back Radulov.
Yeah.
I'm still not putting it past Pittsburgh.
Oh, no, yeah. One of the best. Yeah, I mean, because look at it this way. You have... So let's just parse out the guys at the top. I'm not really making lines here, but Pacioretty, Drouin, Galchenyuk, Radulov, just those five right there, and then Gallagher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did I say five? That was four.
Yeah.
Gallagher. And then you go on down the list, Arturi Lekkonen, to me, is going to be a very good player in the NHL. I think Paul Byron kind of came out of nowhere last season. So you're looking at a top nine of basically all skill guys.
Yeah.
And then you go further down the list, I think Philippe Danault actually showed a lot last season.
Mm.
And I think the hope would be that if they actually play this right, which they won't. This is only under the assumption, by the way, that they would do what's smart. But Dano, to me, was put in a position to be the number one center. I don't think that's who he is. But if he's your third center, you're in pretty good shape.
Mm.
So this is what they could have.
Yeah.
It's not what they will do, but if they stuck to this. And then there's Andrew Shaw, who...
Yeah.
Is actually only 25.
I know, it's weird. It seems like he's been around
forever. It's
the mustache. I just keep thinking, too, that the power play suddenly, granted that they keep Galchenyuk, looks very crowded.
Yeah.
Like they have a lot of fun toys to play with.
Yeah, actually, I saw an interesting video on Twitter earlier, right before we started recording, that Drouin has historically, in Tampa Bay, always been on the left side of the ice on the power play.
Which is great because he can set up Galchenyuk on the other side.
It's great, but that's where Shea Weber hangs out. Shea Weber hangs out at the top of the faceoff dot.
Mm,
so
right.
They'd have to sort that one out. But, you know, I think that's kind of overthinking in a way, because to me, Drouin strikes me as a guy where you could put him like anywhere on the ice and he would matter.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And if you have a lot of movement on the power play, because that's always a good thing.
Yeah, and the Habs power play has been a major, major weakness in the last while.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Problem addressed.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Next up on the list of things that we want to talk about today, since although, you know, expansion season is here, or like the off season is kind of in full form now, there's still not a whole lot that's happened. One interesting thing to me that stood out in the last couple of days was the Anaheim Ducks not asking Kevin Bieksa to waive his no movement clause.
Mm.
I thought this was very interesting for a number of reasons, but the biggest one being that them asking him to waive and him agreeing to waive would basically leave Vegas with nothing.
Mm.
Absolutely nothing.
You said their options would become like Vermette or Shaw.
It'd be basically Logan Shaw would be the guy. I don't know what to make of this. So I want your guys' takes first before I try to parse it out.
I mean, you were the one explaining it to me yesterday because it didn't make any sense to me.
So without Bieksa waiving his no movement clause, obviously they have to protect him. Who becomes available? Whose spot does he take?
So that's the thing. Okay. So here's what happens. If Bieksa doesn't wave, which means if he doesn't wave, they automatically have to protect him.
Yeah.
There was then an assumption on Ducks Twitter, which I spend a lot of time on, that they would buy him out, which is completely ludicrous, not happening. They love the guy. So then you get into the situation where if you protect him, then there has to be an assumption. The Ducks would never protect Kevin Bieksa if they knew it would cost them a guy that matters, namely Josh Manson, Sammy Vatanen. It's one of those two guys, because they would absolutely protect Fowler and Lindholm right off the bat.
Yeah.
So my assumption is that they're going to trade Vatanen to someone, possibly to Vegas, or let's see. That's the one. Because other than that, they have to know there's a deal to be made.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. And I think there's also this kind of like old boys club angle where they're basically saying, look, we're going to help you guys out. Mm. We want to have this goodwill. I don't really understand that angle, personally.
I do.
Well, I mean, like, I get why you would be inclined to do that. Mm. But from a competitive standpoint, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Because if you protect Bieksa, or if you don't protect Bieksa, you get him to waive his no move, then you leave Vegas with nothing.
Yeah.
And you're ironclad.
Yeah.
Right? I think what I truly think about this is that they probably floated the idea to him, to Bieksa, during the season of, hey, would you be willing to move your no move clause so that we can not lose anyone?
Mm.
And then he probably said either no or displayed some like negative emotion towards it. And then now the story that's coming out, because I think the Ducks are very tight with the national hockey media.
Mm.
I mean, especially guys like Pierre LeBrun, who makes it abundantly clear that he loves the California franchises.
Yep.
And once you know it, he was the one reporting the Bieksa story.
Yeah.
So I think they knew he wouldn't waive or whatever. So they leaked the story that they never asked him because they don't want to offend Kevin Bieksa or whatever.
Yeah.
Which to me, if you care more about that than the rest... Anyway, I don't have to go further into that.
What are they doing with Patrick Eaves?
I don't think he's coming back.
Okay.
They don't have the cap space.
Okay. Isn't the other fun rumor going around is that all this is opening up for like a Galchenyuk to Anaheim trade for like Vatanen or...
We'll get into that. But I think someone threw this idea at me on Twitter, which I found interesting, is that what could be happening between Vegas and Anaheim, there has to be a ton of chatter, is that Vegas was like, you know what? They probably played off the idea that, you know, Anaheim was worried about the Bieksa situation. It's like, hey, you know what, Bob Murray? Don't worry about Bieksa. Don't worry about Vatanen. Just give us some prospects, and we'll call this a day.
Yeah.
I think that's what's happening. And they have to take someone.
Right.
So it's going to be like Logan Shaw or something. But I think what's happening here is they're telling, hey, don't worry about any of this. We're not going to take any of your guys. Just give us, like... Let me scroll down the list here of prospects.
It sounds like extortion.
Well, that's what I kind of don't like about this stuff, is that none of this is like, unless I'm missing something, it seems within like the rules.
Well, it is within the rules. If
it feels like tampering, kind of.
You can if you can't.
It feels off the rails.
If you can't protect anyone, or if there are still players on your roster that you can't protect that you don't want to lose, you can make a deal with Vegas and trade them like draft picks and whatever, and maybe even prospects. And yeah, I'm not sure if that meets the requirement of taking players off of, you know, that team's roster,
mm-hmm.
or if, you know, it's something a little different than that. But like what it sounds like is they're getting, you know, they're, like you said, they're giving Vegas you know, draft picks or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't quite. This doesn't spell out that someone's leaving.
No one's going to Vegas from Anaheim.
Yeah,
that's like impactful.
Yeah, so like but the thing is, you know, with prospects, it's the ones that are going to be available have to have played a certain number of games in the NHL, and with Anaheim, like they're.
Well, you're talking about the expansion draft, I mean, Logan Shaw qualifies.
Yeah,
I think he's the guy leaving.
Okay.
Well, that's an interesting point. What I would say is that here's another angle I want to present, is that it could have also been Anaheim approaching Vegas saying, look, we don't want to lose our guys, and Vegas obviously wants to get off the right foot, off to the right like relationship with all these franchises. So Anaheim approached him and said, hey, look, we don't want to lose all our guys. We want this to work between our teams. We want to have good negotiations. How about instead of, if we can get assurance that you won't take all our guys, we'll give you one of our like B-level prospects. Which, if you're Vegas, is kind of what you should be wanting right now, because you're not going to be good next year. You want to be good down the line. So if you get a guy from, you know, Anaheim's prospect pool, which is actually reasonably deep.
Yeah, Anaheim drafts well.
Then look, it's kind of a good deal for both sides.
Yeah.
The Vegas gets something that is going to be useful to them down the line. And, you know, I mean, Logan Shaw.
negligible.
You know, he could maybe be a useful fourth liner.
Yeah, because,
you know,
because Vegas is going to have probably a very veteran team, and they're going to need guys coming up in the pipeline.
So to me, the Bieksa not being asked thing was kind of like the tip of the iceberg, because I think that was a signal that a lot of stuff is happening. And also, what's interesting is when people talk about buying out Bieksa, he's over 35 or 35 and up. He just turned 36, so buying him out wouldn't remove his cap hit or wouldn't stretch his cap hit. So you'd still be paying him his full cap hit next season anyway.
Right.
So it wouldn't really help you. And maybe I'm interpreting that a little weirdly, but I think that's the gist of it.
Yeah.
So
I think the NHL likes this, though. I think they the drama of like people talking like
honestly,
behind closed doors.
I'm far more interested with like this kind of conversation than like, is Pittsburgh going to three-peat?
Yeah.
Personally.
Oh, yeah, me too. It's great.
Because I don't care about that.
Yeah.
You know?
Not right now.
Not right now. Yeah. Well, I mean, if they three-peat, it'd be kind of lame, in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm not down.
I'm not down for a three-peat.
Not down.
I think a repeat is cool. I'm happy for Crosby. I'm happy for the 101st best player in NHL history, Evgeny Malkin.
Yeah.
and Phil Kessel. Like, I'm happy for those guys, because I think they deserved it, like we've kind of been saying. But as far as these kind of stories go, with the kind of beneath the surface off-season stuff, that feels more interesting to me.
Yeah, I feel it.
And I think fans, I thought during the off-season that like sort of like my Twitter would kind of die down a little bit, and my Twitter's still blowing up with just like people want to know everything about this expansion draft and free agency, and like it's crazy the knowledge that these fans have.
So. Yeah, we got a tweet from a listener, Alex McKay, a few days ago, saying, when are the dominoes going to start to fall? And it feels like they're starting to fall.
Yeah.
I think they've been falling, but like I think Joe was saying, like nothing's being leaked.
Right.
Yeah. So
no, the NHL...
There's no James Comeys.
Yeah, they specifically they told the GM managers, don't say anything. They want... When it's revealed, like when... the protected list comes out, and then when the roster comes out, those are the two dates that they want information to come out.
Because they want everyone tuning in to see this.
Right. So the 17th is the deadline for the protection list for the NHL. And then the 18th is when they go public.
Right.
So there is that gap. I don't get why you wouldn't just... Well, I guess you have that sort of window. So like if anything goes wrong, the NHL can sort it out with the clubs. And then the next day gets released. It's going to be interesting. I'm not optimistic that the Vegas's roster will look that all that impressive, at least from what they yield from the expansion draft. I think they're going to be able to cobble together something via trade and like all the stuff we've been highlighting with the backdoor stuff, the back room stuff.
Ooh.
So it's going to be interesting.
And Vegas is also going to have, first dibs on free agent signings.
Yes, which is like how much help do these guys need? You know,
well, from the sounds, like everything you've said about Vegas so far is I don't think they're gonna have a great roster.
But systemically they've been given a lot of help,
because
they got a lottery pick.
Yeah, the NHL doesn't want a team the Sharks coming to the league where their second season they only won 11 games.
Oh, yeah. Because you want to...
Columbus was bad for so long.
Yeah.
And, Florida, Minnesota. Like, these teams only just started getting good.
Yeah.
They don't want that. They want, a team that...
That is at least going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
And that is going to be, like, a good product. And I get it, especially in a market like Vegas, which I'm sure they've done their research on its long-term viability, but you still want to kind of make good on your investment right away because... it's not a Calgary and Edmonton where you know you're just going to get that you know gate money right from the get. It is a bit volatile.
It's like when the Winnipeg Jets came back. The whole first season that they were back was a honeymoon, and then the second season was like, okay, but seriously, like, win some games.
And we're still at that point.
Winnipeg's
going to be fascinating next season.
If they don't turn around this season, I don't know what the hell they're doing.
Maurice, dude. Paul Maurice cannot.
Well, they doubled down. They extended him.
I don't understand. Like, I don't understand.
Well, it's also a matter of like who's his replacement? Like who's, because I think he's a good NHL coach.
Yeah.
And I think given the temperament of their GM Kevin Cheveldayoff, who's very unwilling to do much, I could see why he would not look for a replacement.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of talent, so yeah. Winnipeg could be really good next season. We wanted to squeeze in SJ Sharks offseason preview. How much time are we at right now?
We're almost at an hour 20.
But 25 minutes of that was dead air.
Oh, in the beginning?
Oh, yeah. You didn't stop the recording?
No, I didn't stop after I got like our intro stuff.
Oh, okay. Okay, we have time.
Okay, let's touch on this a little bit. So I've looked at the Sharks roster a bunch of times now, and what I've deduced is that, first off, they have a nice amount of cap space, but, I mean, the elephant in the room here is that Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau are free agents, and they're both 37 years old.
Mm.
Joe Thornton coming off a pretty bad season.
By his standards.
And, I mean, if you view it just from goals and assists, he had a very bad season. But if you understand, you know, his overall impact in the game, he didn't have
a bad season. I know I'm not far off on this, but he was only something like 5 assists away from the top 10 in the league. So
yeah, and I mean, he's still a dynamic player.
If you think about it, you know, whether or not, I'm not sure which one is like the actual the bottom line, but the Sharks' power play sucked.
It was kind of a self-inflicted suck.
Did Joe Thornton have a bad season because the power play sucked? And, you know, just people weren't putting pucks in the net? Or did the power play suck because Joe Thornton had a bad season?
Well, I think the answer to that is the power play sucked because of its, like, composition. The fact that they were so reliant, not even reliant, reliant's the wrong way to put it. They kind of forced, they fell in love with this idea that Brent Burns was just going to score on every wrist shot from the right side.
Yeah.
Not even, like, his off wing. And lo and behold, in the playoffs, when they started moving him to the left dot, they started seeing some better movement. They kind of abandoned what made them so successful the season prior with the low to high movement. I mean, they were still doing it, except it wasn't as effective because you're giving it to a defenseman at the point on his strong side who's going to shoot it basically from like 3-point range.
Yeah,
it's just not a way to win, really. I mean, like, the great thing about analytics is we know what's kind of useful and what's not, and like with point shots, especially if it's not a one-timer, it's your lowest probability shot.
Right.
Yeah, unless you're Chris Pronger,
and even then, those are one-timers. Brent Burns wasn't even taking one-timers. So, the point being, I think that the power play was bad, in large part because of how it was composed, and I think that I look at the guys the Sharks have behind the bench, the coaches, and I think that they seem competent enough to figure it out this offseason. So I wouldn't be too worried, but I would also be mildly worried.
No, the big concern that you and I were talking about yesterday is the lack of willingness by the coaches to mix up the D pairs.
Okay, so before we get into that, because that is like a whole other bag of worms, can of worms?
Something that worms are put stored into.
I don't know why that's like the like go-to phrase.
It's a fishing
thing. What do you do with Marlon Thornton? Because you have $14 million in cap space, you have to assume that they're still both worth around, let's say, I'll throw you a number and let's see how you feel about it, 5.5 to 6.5. I feel like that's what those guys can get.
Yeah.
Is that what they're worth?
No.
You tell me.
I mean, I see Marleau. You know, it's easier to quantify Marleau because the production is down. Like, he's not the elite player even on his team that he was even a few years ago, but you know, he's still fast, and you know, he's still serviceable in, you know, situations like PK and on the power play also. So like it's much easier to find a box that he fits in. And I think he's sort of like in that 4-5-5 range.
For Marlowe?
Yeah. Like I think that's sort of what you can get out of him.
I think that is closer to what he's worth and what I'd be willing to give him.
And the question is, I think he is going to get offers from other teams and probably better offers than the Sharks are.
Offers he should probably take.
Yeah.
If it will, depending what he cares about. Yeah.
I mean, if he, you know, if the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, give him, you know, an offer for, you know, more than what the Sharks are giving him, then yeah, he should probably take it, you know.
Right.
You know, because it depends on how much he wants to win a cup versus how much he wants to stay in San Jose.
Well, my impression of Patrick Marlowe, and I don't know the guy, I've never met him, we haven't texted or anything, I feel like he'd be more of the wanting to win a cup guy. Well, actually, he's so hard to read, because I feel like he could be also fine with not winning a cup, and also that would be his goal late in his career. It's kind of one or the other with him.
I think it's also a little bit of, I mean, I know I was the one who sort of posed the question, but you know, it's a little bit of both. I think he'd probably very much like to win the cup in San Jose.
Yeah, I think if it's either he signs for cheap in San Jose or he just goes and like takes the money and runs with like another team that regardless of their contention.
And he doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. Like
No, because I think he either wants to win it with the Sharks,
mm-hmm.
or look, if he wins it with another team, great. And if he doesn't, like, yeah. I'm still swimming in, like, $6.5 million. Right. But, again, this is all conjecture. I have no idea, but this is just kind of what I've seen.
He's already said that he thinks, in terms of his usefulness on an NHL roster, that he can play until he's 42. Like, he thinks his legs will hold out that, you know, for another, you know, five more seasons.
Well, has he had any major injuries?
None.
Yeah, like, so that's why he's
still
fast.
At least not in a very long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've said it before. I want them both back, but I also want to upgrade the blue line. Yeah. So, you know, having money tied up in those guys.
Well, so that's the difficulty. So handicaps. Let's just assume that if they bring them both back, it's going to be around $12 million for both. That's maybe snip off a little bit of that, especially if I don't know how much goodwill they have with Doug Wilson. Very hard to read that situation.
Mm.
But if you can convince them, hey, if you can take a little bit of a haircut, we can like do some things.
Yeah. And we know a couple seasons ago that Marlowe, you know, there were, you know, offers for him, and you know the Sharks did try to get him to waive, you know, his no trade clause, mm-hmm. and you know he wouldn't. And with Thornton, we know that there have been, I don't know if they actually had any sort of serious deals on the table for Thornton. I don't think so, but I know that they were trying to push him out when they were thinking that they had to go into a major rebuild.
When they were signing John Scott.
Yeah. but with Thornton, we've seen him be stubborn in the past more than just, no, I'm not leaving. You know, there's the kind of player he is, you know, where he's the pass first player, which is fine. That's who Joe Thornton is. That's why he's going to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, whether or not, you know, he, however many goals he scores, you know, it's never really, you know, the issue. Like, you know, people always want to say, you know, like, yeah, you know, just shoot the puck more, you know, you score more goals, you know, it helps the team just as much as pass, whatever. But like, the only time that it's ever an issue is when he's alone in the slot with no one in front of him.
Right.
And then he still passes it.
To Brendan Dillon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which doesn't really happen all that often.
Yeah. Like, it rarely happens.
Right.
Like, when it happens, it's very aggravating, but it rarely happens. And so we know Thornton's personality, and he's a bit more stubborn, and he's dug his heels in, you know, a little bit firmer than Marlowe has. So I can see whatever Thornton's going to be worth entering, you know, age 38 and, you know, coming off of, you know, a substantial knee surgery.
Yes.
And probably what could be his last contract, if not definitely second to last. I could see him, you know, milking, you know, the Sharks for a little bit more money. Yeah, you know, like,
well, I mean, they've earned it. Like, they,
oh yeah,
they've certainly earned it. I think they should. They should. I think their first option should be to try to bring them both back.
Yeah.
On team friendly deals, and if it starts becoming unreasonable, the thing with the Sharks is that they can't really afford to lose those guys, because if you don't, you have all this cap space, and I don't really know who's out there off the top of my head that you can just throw money at and will come and make your team instantly better. So it's either via trade, which they don't really have that many trade chips, you know, like that are just surefire, we'll get you the guy without hurting your depth.
They have trade chips, but nothing that will get them a replacement for, at very least, Thornton.
And yeah, exactly. So I say take your hardest swing at keeping both those guys, and because outside of that, look, you got Pavelski, who's still there for two more years, who's 32. Couture is only 28, but still in two more years, and
injury prone.
Who is broken? Like, he's just broken.
Yeah.
And I wish for him to be healthy, because I think he's a good player when healthy. And Tomáš Hertl, who's 23, but has already been hurt a bunch of times.
Yeah.
So,
and then supporting guys like Donskoy and Carlson, who are substantial players, but yeah, also injury prone.
I think that there is some upside to like some of the younger guys coming through the pipeline, like Timo Meier. Mm. I think Timo Meier is going to be huge for this team next season.
Yeah.
And then Marcus Sorensen. But again, you're talking about guys more trending towards like middle six than, you know, first liners.
Yeah.
And without Marlon Thornton, those guys get brought up maybe to positions they're not really comfortable in. Marlon and Thornton kind of maintain this like harmony.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very good way to put it.
Yeah. And so, again, so if you lose Marlon Thornton, you're left with this kind of, I don't want to call it broken top guys, but you're left with this kind of situation that's built around those two. Mm. And without those two, you're kind of left with a bunch of support guys. That doesn't mean they can't do anything in free agency, but it's, you kind of have to bring them back. I don't know. And if you don't bring them back, I think you go completely the other way and you rebuild.
Yeah.
Because I don't think this team without those two and a substantial replacement can do much of anything.
I mean, guys,
especially in the West with Edmonton coming up.
Guys like Meier would have to jump in and like hit the ground running.
And like, he's looked good in spurts. I mean, I thought he looked good last season.
Mm.
We're like, are we at that point now where last season is this season?
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know what he's going to be.
Yeah.
I think at the very least, he's going to be a very good middle six guy.
Mm.
And at the very best, he's like a solid top line guy.
Yeah.
But that's, to me, the former feels more likely than the latter.
For now.
For now. Yeah. We'll see. So all that being said, that's the forward group.
Yeah.
Then there's the blue line, which they're kind of stuck with. Everyone's under contract, at least. Well, you have Dylan DeMello, who has one more year until he hits RFA. Marc-Edouard Vlasic is on the last year of his incredibly team-friendly 4.25 contract. Then he's a UFA. But everyone else is locked up for at least the next two or three seasons.
Yeah.
And then you have Brent Burns, who they re-signed to that massive... Was it 88?
Eight years.
Was he 88?
Something like that. Yeah. Something poetic.
He's making $88 million a season. So... Nick and I were talking about this yesterday. The Sharks' big problem is the way their blue line is composed. They don't trust David Schlemko. They don't trust Dylan DeMello.
Which is ridiculous
because then you're left with this second pairing of Marc-Edouard Vlasic and Justin Braun, which just didn't work last season. And it's very concerning because Marc-Edouard Vlasic is getting up there. He's about to be on the wrong side of 30.
And he doesn't take a break.
And he's played an insane amount of minutes and some of the toughest minutes. You have to find a way to insulate him. And then you have Brent Burns, who's supposedly being shepherded along by Paul Martin, although I think it's the opposite.
Yeah.
I don't think Paul Martin is the guy anymore to kind of be covering up Brent Burns' mistakes. The solution I threw out there was putting Vlasic with Burns and then moving Schlemko up with Braun. And then that leaves you with Dylan and Martin on the third pairing, which I think could be an atrocity.
Oh no, it is surefire chaos and bad times.
But but like we also discussed, you know, the San Jose Barracuda, the Sharks affiliate, HL affiliate this year, one of their big strong points in their run to almost the Calder Cup was their blue line. They have some guys down there that you could, you know, potentially bring up. I'm just realizing that their entire roster in the AHL is like RFAs this summer.
Yeah.
But, you know, like guys like Tim Heed, Dan Kelly, is it Joakim?
Joakim Ryan.
Even Mirko Mueller, maybe someday he'll get a look.
Yeah, Julius Bergman.
I don't think so.
Julius Bergman. All of these guys, to me, are... I think they're all better than Brendan Dillon, personally.
I would, with
the exception of maybe one or two guys.
I would much rather see Heed or Bergman or Ryan over, or even Dylan DeMello over.
I like Dylan
Brendan
DeMello.
Dillon.
But if you just put like two of your best AHL guys as your third pairing, all of a sudden I think you have a real blue line.
Yeah, yeah, because the thing that I like about their blue line is they have some very mobile guys like Brent Burns and David Schlemko. Mm-hmm. And Mark-Edward Vlasic is not fleet of foot, but he's a very good skater. Mm-hmm. But then you have Brendan Dillon, who did improve his skating very much, but that's still, you know, the bar was not that high. He was not a good skater to begin with, and he's still not great.
Yeah.
And then Paul Martin, he skates fine, but he's slower. He's slow, he's old, he's just, like you said, his days of being like Brent Burns's guardian,
yeah,
I think are kind of in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, so what's funny is I'm just looking at it on Cap Friendly. They have the positions for each guy, and if guys play multiple positions, it'll list all of them. And for Brent Burns, it's D and then RW.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's probably the only guy in the NHL where it says that.
Bufflin.
Oh, yes.
It still says.
Okay, so they're going to have to do some mixing and matching. Bob Bugner, the guy who was in charge of the D,
yes,
is now the head coach for the Florida Panthers. And so now, I mean, have they found a replacement? I mean, I haven't heard anything. So, I think they're going to look at this, and they're probably going to have to make some adjustments. And you know, they don't have to look at any numbers. They just have to look at, look, we want to preserve Vlasic. We want to make sure that he's going to be still able to do at least close to what he's been doing for the last, like, 12 years.
Yeah.
For at least the next 3 years, you know.
Yeah, and, like, it just makes so much sense because you... Obviously, the third pair would be a problem, and mm-hmm. that's what I want them to address somehow in... trade, free agency, call-ups, whatever, but I love a top four of having Brent Burns and Vlasic together because you still insulate Burns for his defensive deficiencies, mm-hmm. but you take a lot of pressure off of Vlasic because he's probably spending less time in the defensive zone.
And the puck gets out of the zone easier with Burns.
Yeah, but then when they are there, you know, he's there to take care
and
of it.
I just don't think a Vlasic shutdown pairing is a thing anymore, yeah. unless you put him next to an actual... shutdown guy in his prime.
Right.
I think giving Vlasic those minutes, at least last season, didn't work.
Right.
So you have to restructure it.
Yeah. And then I love the idea of moving Schlemko up to the second pair because he spent the whole season on the third pair with Dillon. And we've said before, it's not weird that Brendan Dillon never had a better season than when he was paired with a good puck mover like Schlemko. Right. I don't think Schlemko is a top pair defenseman by mm-hmm. any means, but I think he's a really good, like, solid 3-4 puck-moving defenseman, and I'd like to see him deployed in those minutes. So you put him up there with Justin Braun, who yeah. is a known good defender.
Well, you have to at least find out what you have in Schlemko. I think that's the biggest thing, because he's stood out in these minutes, but the idea is to give him a bigger role, and there's nothing that... We don't know if he's capable.
Yeah,
I don't know how he was in New Jersey. I haven't really paid attention to him for that long, but it's not a guarantee that he'll be good. But I think the Sharks owe it to themselves and to their, you know, and to Mark-Edward Vlasic to try it.
Yeah, yeah. So I would love to see it. The only problem is that they have Brendan Dillon, who I think they're crazy about because he plays that rugged, you know, style that
he'll punch a guy in the mouth.
The good hockey guys appreciate, but then as much as I would like to see him phased out, I don't think that's going to happen. But then you have Paul Martin, who's still under contract for a little while. Mm-hmm. So it's like they've kind of tied themselves in a knot here. They can't put those two together. But I feel like if they could find a way to get someone else into that third pairing.
I mean, we might see something different this coming season than we've seen last year or the year before, because a lot of the shuffling, like the Sharks have always been a team that, you know, is shuttling their guys from the AHL to the NHL, and then, like, you know, sometimes they're there for a day, don't even play a game, and then go back down. Mm. Like, yeah, and they're constantly doing it, and it's all about, you know, Doug Wilson is constantly shuffling to save cap room or whatever in this past season. it was, you know, they had to keep in mind the expansion draft, and they were, it's like, oh, these players can only play a certain amount of time in the NHL, otherwise they're going to be exposed. Mm. So with the expansion draft gone, you know, after this coming week, that's not going to be a worry anymore, and they might be a little more free to experiment a little bit and, you know, have guys actually spend time in the NHL or with certain players and actually, you know, maybe build, you know, build train guys more than more like they want to, as opposed to being handcuffed by, you know, potentially losing them.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I don't think they really have that many avenues to improve their roster outside of trade. Mm-hmm. And the trade would have, and the thing is, they kind of, I don't want to say they have a surplus of forwards, but they have forwards they could move. But then what are you getting in return? And, you know, if you trade for another D-man, then you have this big pile of D-men.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think what they should do is, like I said, try to re-sign Marlon Thornton. And if not, either move in a different direction or aggressively pursue a trade. I don't really see a path internally. Next summer is going to be interesting because Joel Ward comes off the books. Yannick Hansen comes off the books. Vlasic's up for renewal.
Is Adam Birch finally off the books?
He is? Yes.
I think so.
Good.
So, anyway, they're going to have a bit more room next season. We'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that does it for the preview, or the off-season preview.
Yes.
Not the season preview. Thanks to everyone for listening. Hopefully we'll be back probably in a few days because I'm assuming Alex Galchenyuk will get traded and we'll have to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. That might happen tomorrow.
That might happen. Like, that might have already happened.
It might happen before this goes up.
Yeah, check Twitter.
I'm being sarcastic, but actually not.
Yeah.
Like,
I thought it was going
to
happen today.
With the Drouin trade, that was the first domino. Things are starting to happen now. I think something's going to happen every day until the draft and then free agency.
Absolutely. And the draft is in... it's in 3 days.
It'll be on Wednesday.
6 days, sorry.
It'll be on Wednesday.
Something like that. Anyway, my brain is kind of fried here. It's going to be crazy.
I can't wait.
It's going to be crazy. Probably a lot more pods on the way
because
we want to catch all of it. Anyway, thanks guys for listening. If you've been listening, enjoying the show, make sure to leave a review on iTunes. We love to hear that. Helps the show get noticed. Follow us on Twitter at Garage Hockey Pod, where we kind of rarely tweet. We should probably get on that.
We should.
We're trying to grow our Facebook following. Do something with that. So if you enjoy the show, throw it a like on Facebook, facebook.com/GarageHockeyPod. Most importantly, leave the review. That's what we enjoy the most. We just love to hear your thoughts, and it motivates us to put out more shows. Thanks for listening, guys.